4. I'm talking with Charlie Cater. And this is tape 2, side 1.
August 3rd, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. You were talking...
All right, I was telling you about this farmer that stole us. The
double
harness.
Harness.
Because he needed a set of harness. Well, they brought him up here and they tried him and they found him guilty. And the judge sentenced him to some time in the federal and the Oregon State Penitentiary. And the clerks and so forth and the judge made up commitment papers. And then the judge delivered the papers to the sheriff with instructions to take this convicted felon down to Salem and turn him in at the penitentiary. So the sheriff, whose name, would you like to know his name?
Mm-hmm.
His name was Jess Brashears.
Okay.
Brashears. Jess Brashears. J-E-S-S-E. So, the sheriff had a problem, and he talked to this convicted felon. And he said, I don't have time to take you down to the state pen. Now, listen to this. This is very important. So he says to this man, this convict, he says, I'm going to give you these conviction commission papers, and I want you to go down and turn yourself in. And then he said, will you do that? Now, these people had known each other for years. They were old acquaintances here in the valley. So the sheriff was saying, in effect, I'm going to just rely on you to take these commitment papers and go down there and turn yourself in. Will you do that? And the man said, well, sure, I'll do that, Jess. Of course I will. So he delivers it. The sheriff gives the man the commitment papers. And the man leaves. And he goes down to Salem. And he goes to the penitentiary. And he goes to the warden's office. And he has these commitment papers. And he says that he'd come there to turn himself in to serve the time that's mentioned in these papers. Well, for some reason, the warden says, well, I just can't take you in right now. I don't have room or something. Can you wait a few days? The fellow says, yeah, sure, I can do that. So this man went downtown, rented a room in a hotel, and when the warden was ready, he went back up there and turned himself in and served his sentence in full. And then they turned him loose, and he came back up here. And he went to the county clerk's office and he put in a claim for his hotel bill while he was waiting. Now, I knew about this. Jess was a real friend of mine. I checked, or tried to check, through the records, and I found where he put in his claim, but I did not find where they paid it. And that's the end of the story. Now, we have other stories. there was a man that lived in Union. He's gone now. He died 2 or 3 years ago. I knew him very well. We used to shoot trap together there at Cove and Union. And the startling thing about this man was his history and his education. His name was George Kincaid. K-I-N-C-A-I-D. And the startling thing about him was that he had, somehow or other, he was an employee or an appointee of the Oregon State Fire Chief's Office. I don't think I've got the word right. But he had learned somehow or other things about fire suppression. The odd thing was that his education ended when he finished the fourth grade. And when I knew him, and just before that, he had taught in one of our state universities with no educational background except fourth grade. But he was teaching in one of our universities. Now, if that isn't a good enough story, I'll change it. No, that's the end of it. But he did teach in one of the universities. He taught fire suppression. He was a hired hand or an appointee of the state fire marshal.
Do you remember about what time this was? What decade?
No, I never did know.
Okay, because that still is very important in this county.
Well, I can't tell you. When I knew Mr. Kincaid, it was several years ago because I knew him when I was shooting there and when he was shooting there. And his wife was there every time with him.
Okay, I'd like to go back to the black experience here in the county and what your contact has been with black citizens here, starting with these men that came up from Arkansas.
Well, you're not going to get much out of me on that. I will say this, that with very minor exceptions, the black people here were damn good citizens. They were friendly with all the rest of us, no matter what our color was. One of them, a man named Field Robertson, bought my mother's house after she died.
This was in LeGrand?
Yes.
Do you remember the street?
I sure do. You know where the underpass is when you leave here to go to Elgin?
Yes.
Well, just this side of that, there's a service station or a repair shop on the west side of the intersection, or the northwest section. Her house was just this side of that commercial establishment. It's there yet today.
Okay.
And the house is there. Across the intersection, there lived a black man by the name of Field, F-I-E-L-D, Robertson, R-O-B-E-R-S-O-N, Field Robertson. After my mother died, I sold her house to Field Robertson with no down payment. And eventually, it was fully paid off.
Okay, that's similar to selling on contract. Is that like selling on contract?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know anything more about Field Roberson?
He's a good man. Okay. Hard-working man.
You had other legal dealings with the black community.
I kind of run across one. I didn't do this, and it happened before I got here. But a white woman from this across the tracks away, I think. I'm not sure where she lived. But she complained against a black man and charged him with rape. Now, this was all over and done with when I got here. They told me about it. They wanted to tell me about it. And they sure as hell did.
Who told you about it?
The people in the courthouse.
Okay.
You bet. That's it.
What happened in the case from what you learned?
Well, she charged this black man with that. So the district attorney decided that he would convene a grand jury and find out from witnesses the basis to see if there was a reason to charge this black man with rape. So they convened the grand jury, and they had one witness. The one witness was the woman, a white woman, that complained about rape. So they asked her to tell what happened, and she did. And this is about what she said. Well, she said, this man came to my house about 8 o'clock in the evening. Evening. And he raped me. And then he left. And then he came back about 11 o'clock at night and he raped me again. And then he left. And he came back about 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock. And he was getting ready to rape me again. And the kid started crying and he got mad and left. They didn't charge the man. That was the end of it.
That was the end of the case.
That was enough. That was just exactly enough.
Were there other cases where you defended, you weren't involved in that case, but were there other cases you were involved defending black people here?
Yeah, I can tell you one. I can only think of one right now. There was a white guy by the name of Thad Rosenberg. And he lived I think, on the other side of the tracks. When you say that, you build a picture of people.
Where was the other side of the tracks? What's the physical location?
That's where most of the black people live. Isn't that true?
Which part of La Grande was
that? Oh, that's the east.
The east side.
On the other side of the track.
Okay.
Well, anyway, Thad Rosenberg had a house over there. And one evening, he thought that somebody was about to commit a crime on his property. There was a black man involved. He thought this black man was ripping off his car or something. So he got a gun and he fired a shot and he hit a black man. And the bullet went into the black man's chest and lodged near his heart, but didn't kill him. Later, he came to me, and I brought an action for damages against Thad Rosenberg for this black man.
Do you remember the person you were working with? What his name? Not Thad Rosenberg, but the man who was shot.
Yeah, his name was Ivory. I-V-O-R-Y. I can't think of his first name. But anyway, we tried the case, and we won the case. And we got a verdict that didn't amount to much dollar-wise. But at least it was a triumph for the black man and me, in a small way. You got to remember, this is not a big case. It's a little case. I don't think that ever held it against me. My helper here is continually astonished. And this is just one more astonishing thing. That no matter what I did, and I roughed people the wrong way, I threw them out of my office on one or two occasions, I beat a man up because he did what I didn't like, and I never encountered any ill will afterward. Now, we don't know why, but she knows that's the way it is. Well,
okay, were there criminal charges in this case?
Which case?
About
the black man?
Yeah, the one who was against the man who did the shooting.
There might have been, there should have been.
But there weren't.
No.
Do you know why weren't criminal charges?
No, I do not know why. It's possible because I preempted the thing with an action for damages. Could be. Don't know.
Okay. What else do you know about criminal activity in La Grande?
I know that the Elks Club used to maintain a kind of a little gambling establishment with machines and things. And one of the professional gamblers around here that maintained that used various machines to make a living resented the fact that the Elks Club was infringing on his turf, his business. So he came to me. He wanted me to shut down the Elks Club. Well, I was not a member of the Elks Club, and I never have been. And that's another story. But, and you never heard this one. So I made contact with certain friends, my friends, and I caused that gambling in the Elk Club to be shut down. Man paid me for doing that. Ain't much of a story.
Okay, what legal grounds? Were they using slot machines? What were the machines
you're
talking about?
Oh, I think so. I think that's probably what they were doing. Well, slot machines are wonderful gadgets, provided you own them. And I owned one once.
What did you do with it?
I made money, hand over fist. And I brought it all home. I was in the military at the time. But I want to tell you what the sheriff said to me one time. In fact, he said it to me several times. You got to remember, or at least contemplate, that the sheriff and I were very good friends.
What's the sheriff's name?
Jess Brashears.
Jess Brashears, okay.
Great man. When I would go at the courthouse, I'd always stop by in his office, say hello. And sometimes he'd say to me, Charlie, do you think you'll ever amount to anything?
What was your response?
None. I didn't need to. None at all. I think he wasn't disappointed. I don't think I disappointed him.
What else happened with the man who manufactured the slot machines?
He wasn't a maker. He just bought them, rented them. He became a successful operator over in Hermiston, I believe.
Of slot machines, still?
Oh, probably several different kinds of ways to take people and money. If you want my views on gambling, I am definitely opposed to any kind of gambling.
What other kinds? There's slot machines and backroom gambling that you've talked about. What other kinds do you know about in Union County?
Just operating a law office is enough gamble for me. You know, when you come here without anything, nobody, with about 6 bits in your pocket and a wife and a strange place, thoughts do run through your mind. But I wasn't smart enough to think. I just poked along and went ahead. And here I am.
So you never got involved yourself with the gambling you did in the military?
Oh, no, no. No way. Unless operating as I did, running a law business, is gambling. And it is to a certain extent. When you hear, you have, and you will again, hear talk about tort reform.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what that is?
They're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Tort reform.
I can tell you what it is. It is very simple. It is slamming the door in the face of anybody that has been damaged by anybody else, a corporation, a government agency. They want to fix it, and they blame it on the lawyers. That's my idea of bullshit. Why? Because a lawyer never goes to court just alone. He goes with a client. He goes, if he's seeking damages, with somebody that has been injured, or at least he claims he's been injured. And tort reform is just simply a way to prevent people from having their day in court. Now, there's only one way. The ordinary person can get justice in a court where he's been harmed. He has to hire a lawyer. And how does he pay the lawyer? Most people don't have money enough to pay a lawyer. Believe me, I know, and you know. Lawyers are expensive. Some more expensive than others. But there is no way the average person who has been injured or damaged can afford to go to court by paying a lawyer his fee. The way it has to be done is on a contingent fee basis. The lawyer says, if we win, you get X dollars and I get part of it. And that's how the lawyer gets paid.
Okay. Do you know of other people in the county who have been involved in a noteworthy way with gambling?
Oh, no. No, I don't know. No, I do not know.
Are there other legal cases you know about?
No. I have never heard of any legal cases arising out of gambling in Union County. None whatsoever. Now, sooner or later, any effort in that direction just runs out of steam, is terminated by events, and we've had a couple of people there that made a living in that sort of a dusky, dark area. And I know the names of some of them. Who's our friend that was the most noticeable? No. Never heard of him. I have heard of him, but I put nothing together on him. I don't know a thing. It was Robert. No, not Virgil. No, Virgil was a straight arrow. Still is. It's Robert.
What's the story about Robert?
Oh, he had a few little gadgets that people put money into.
You're talking about like slot machines and similar mechanisms?
Oh, I think so. I really... Yeah. Fallow.
Do you know how to spell his last name?
F-A-L-L-O-W.
Okay. What was his history?
What was what?
What was his history with his business?
He's just an ordinary guy that tried to make a living. That was the way he did it, and I think he made a pretty good living. But he was lucky. And one day he had a physical examination, and they found that he had a serious situation, and they operated on him, and I think they cured it. Is that right? Yeah, he was, I don't think he had a bad reputation in the community. No, I wouldn't say that. No, sir, either. You know where the Oregon Trail runs right out here?
Mm-hmm.
Up Geckler Lane. Yeah. Comes to a...
Conversation with Charlie Cater on 8/3/2004. This is tape 2, side 2. We were talking about a house going out of town that was part of the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, somebody built a house right square on that old trail. You can see it running up the side of the mountain above where they built the house. The house plugged it. You can't go up the trail.
Do you know about when the house was built?
No, I have no idea. No, but I do know that the way people got west when they were had wagons and oxen, or horses, or mules. They went up the side of this mountain, over the top, down across the Grand Ronde River. And then through the forest, trees. It was a rough deal. The ones that weren't using wagons didn't go that way. They went north, right through Elgin, or near there.
Up Tollgate Highway.
Huh?
You're talking about Tollgate Highway.
Nope. It wasn't the highway then.
But Tollgate.
It wasn't even Tollgate. It was just a path through the forest north of where you live.
Okay, I want to close the tape. We've been going for close to an hour and a half, so we'll close the tape and pick up again. Thank you. Okay, this is August 17th. This is Ron Brand. I'm talking with Charlie Cater for our third session. Charlie, we're looking at a book on the Klan in LeGrand, and I'm interested in the history of what you know about Klan people, the effect on the community.
Well, what I know is what I read in this book, mostly. And my acquaintance with two lawyers, Cochran and Eberhard, who were active in the Klan.
What were their first names?
Well, there was George T. Cochran and Colon Eberhard, C-O-L-O-N. They're both gone long ago. But you got to remember that this was all past history when I came to LeGrand Inn. I got here in 1939 in the fall, and this thing had petered out in the early or mid-20s.
Okay. Yeah, that's all included in the history of that book.
That's true.
You knew that the Eberhard and Cochran were both lawyers?
Oh, of course. They had their office right close to mine.
What kind of lawyers were they?
Well, they were old-fashioned and in every way you can think of. They weren't the greatest lawyers in the world, and they barely were able to acquire some standing in the community. And mainly that was done through Cochran's skill and knowledge of water rights. Now, water rights is a word that you don't hear much anymore. But water rights were very important to the early residents of the entire West because of a law or a tradition having to do with water rights. And I'll see if I can think of the words. The rights depended on a word or two that I don't have right handy, but it refers to the first appropriators, the first person or organization that appropriated the use of water in the West gained a permanent right.
Perpetual.
Well, yes, I think that's a good word. We don't know words like that out in the West, but evidently you do. Yeah, I agree. I'm just teasing you. Anyway, rule was rigidly followed, and it caused an awful lot of trouble because people would kill each other for water. No question about it. For a long time.
In your legal practice, did you have to deal with those issues?
No. It was all over. They had settled the water rights in this northeast part of the country before I got here. Cochran was an expert in that area.
Was his standing as a lawyer hurt or helped by his history as a Klansman?
I didn't catch that question.
Was he hurt or helped by his history as a Klansman?
Oh, it helped him. He was also, he and Eberhard, from time to time, were the head honchos in the Masonic order here, which is still, as far as I know, there is still a bunch of Masons running around, and some of them are my friends, or ought to be. I do not approve of secret societies. I have very strong feelings about such matters. Those things are totally undemocratic, un-American, and disgusting.
Was there a lot of crossover between the Masons and the Klan?
Yes, I'm sure there was.
How about other organizations?
I don't know about that, but your main crossovers were Cochran and Eberhard, because they were both, from time to time, the head man in the Masonic Lodge, and at the same time were very active in this Ku Klux Klan thing.
Okay. Do you think some of the other members of the Klan came from the Masons or other groups?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't studied this recently, and I have the book in my hands that has the minutes of their meetings in it. I don't remember.
I remember in the book there's some concern in the minutes for different people who were associating with the wrong kind of people.
Oh, yes.
Like if they hired a Catholic as a crook, yeah. Things like that. What are the problems between the Catholics and whatever other groups that the Klan had targeted that you knew of?
The Klan had a very narrow view of acceptability. Catholics were unacceptable. Jews were unacceptable. Blacks were unacceptable. The strange thing about it was that although they were prejudiced against blacks, there is hardly any mention of that in this book that I recall, nor any problem with the Klan and the black community. I don't recall any. The secret, if there is a secret about the blacks here, is they were hardworking, decent. They associated principally with their own kind, and they got along just beautifully, most of the time, almost all of the time, with the white community, except those people that are a little distorted in their views, like the Ku Kluxer.
Were there other groups that had some of the same anti-black feeling?
Not here.
Not here.
No way.
Okay. How about the Mormons in
the? Well, you're touching on a sensitive subject now. The Mormons carried out for a long time a prejudice against blacks. And the way they did that, or the reason they did it, was because Joseph Smith claimed, as part of his knowledge and background of the Mormon establishment, he claimed that he was able to read the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics. And from reading those hieroglyphics, he came to the conclusion that the blacks were beyond the pale. Now, beyond the pale means something, and I have an idea you know what that means. It comes from Ireland. Are you Irish?
Nope.
You ought to be.
Can't do anything about it.
No, it's too late. No, beyond the pale had to do with the way they segregated people in Ireland. Pale is spelled P-A-L-E. Now, I started to make a comparison. Well, Irish Catholics were beyond the pale in the Klan lexicon.
Was there a Catholic church in the town when you came here?
Yes.
What was the effect on them, or?
I don't know. If maybe Sarah does, but I don't know. Some time after I arrived here and had friends and acquaintances, on a couple of two or three occasions, my wife and I accepted invitations to visit and party in a small way with I wish Sarah was here. There was a dentist here, and he was I think they were Catholics. I'm sure they were, but his wife was. She was a Basque, or I think she was a Basque, at least. I'm pretty sure of that. Those people settled down in Malheur County, the Bats. If you drive down the roads over there, you will see a little corral for animals like sheep or cattle or whatever, and the fence is made of brush piled up. That's the mark of the Basque.
Was there any of that with the sheep people around here?
Yes, just a minute.
That was for me.
Name was Hill.
Gerald Hill.
Gerald Hill. His wife's name, believe it or not, was Santa.
Well, still is.
And still is.
Oh, she's still living.
She is.
Yeah.
I don't know about the doctor.
Yeah.
The last time I took...
He is.
He's still living, but his memory has deteriorated, according to his wife. She told me over the phone when I was talking to her one day. These are interesting people, those Basques.
Okay, Beck, what effect did you see when you came here on the different groups, the Catholics, Masons, Elks, there's a lot of different groups in Le Grand.
Well, I didn't notice it. I wasn't the type of a person to notice those things. I came from the backwoods of Western Oregon and by way of Tillamook and Portland and Saskatchewan, Canada and places like that. And I had gone to a country school or schools all of my life up to that time. I didn't know much about anything, but and I didn't join anything except two things. And that was the National Rifle Association and a local rifle club. And that's all I ever joined except the human race. And I used to brag about being a member of the human race. I'm not so sure that I...
brag anymore?
That's about it, yes. Now, coming back to the way things were when I got here, all of those feelings one against others, like the Klan created, were gone when I got here. I saw no signs of it. And my family my mother, my father, and all my aunts and uncles and grandfather, except one. One grandfather, my father's father, was a Methodist preacher. But other than that, there was no feelings one way or another about religion in all of my relatives. None. So, I come here as a kind of a tabula rasa. You know the word. You know what it means. So, I was open to any decent approach or friendly approach. And one of the approaches that came to me, and it still exists, when I went to visit with Dr. Hill and Santa, usually there would be also another guest, a Catholic priest. Father?
Hank? Father Hank?
Father? Father Hank.
That's Hank Albrecht.
Yes, that's the one. His real name is Henry or Heinrich Albrecht. That's German.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been here a long time. And it was a pleasure for me, and probably my wife too, to get acquainted with Father Hank. Neither of us are Catholics. It doesn't mean a thing. Sarah's a Catholic. I'm nothing. But now I must tell you about Father Hank, and Mrs. Goss and Bill Goss, G-O-S-S. A number of years ago, when Father Hank was a young priest here, he got acquainted with one of the members of his congregation, Mrs. Goss, Bill's wife. Bill is the manager of Goss Motors now, or I think he is. It's either him or his son. And but anyhow, his wife was a member of the church, and she was very friendly with Father Hank. As a result of which, she has extended a continuing invitation to him to have supper with them on Saturday evening. And she did until she died.
What was her name?
Donna.
Donna Goss. That's Bill Goss's former wife. She's dead now. That creates or results in what I think of as a very interesting and a very good story. There's not much to it. But Mrs. Goss couldn't do it anymore. She was gone. Her husband, Bill Goss, not a Catholic at all, any more than my dog is. He carried on.
And continued the friendship with Father Hank.
And fed him every Saturday night. Bill Goss. That is the spirit of this community, in my view. That is better than anything the Ku Klux Klan ever devised or followed.
Well, in the book, and I think from what I know of the Klan, they promoted the flag, the Constitution, and the Bible. In some ways, they were like a populist group, or they pretended to be.
Well, they had a whole bunch of prejudices. Here is the first line in this study that was created by a number of people here. In our investigation, we have heard the LeGrand chapter of the Ku Klux Klan referred to as sort of like a social club, which was popular around the 1920s. This was not the case. The minutes reveal an organization with strong anti-immigrant and particular anti-Catholic position, and so forth and so on. Through boycotts, they seek to bring about the dismissal of Catholics in local enterprises. They kept a Catholic lawyer from his desired kind of a judgeship of...
Which judge was that? Or which man who wanted to be judge?
I'm going to tell you as soon as I find it here. I think he was a lawyer when I got here.
This is R.J. Kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he was acceptable to the Klan. Not everybody was. If you were Irish and Catholic, you were out in the cold. I'm going to find that. Well, two of the students in the school wrote an essay, and it was about the Ku Klux Klan.
Do you know what year that was?
I have no idea, but the date here is...
You're talking about students during, while the Klan was still in existence, wrote a paper about them.
Yes.
Okay.
This happened during that time. And the teacher saw through it and wouldn't read it to the class. So this upset the Klan. And they had something to say about it. And here's what they said. We will someday give that teacher an education in Americanism and sing to her a little song. Quote, if you don't like the hand that's feeding you, go back to Ireland where you belong. I tell you, these people got powerful ideas and ignorant, as I observe to myself and anybody that'll listen, these Klansmen were nothing more or less than retarded teenagers. They never grew up.
And you knew some of these people afterwards.
Why, sure I did.
After you came here. Not just the two lawyers.
Of course I did. There was a man called Singh. That's an interesting word, isn't it?
How do you spell his name?
S-I-N-G.
Okay.
What was it?
Millering.
That was Singh Millering.
Okay.
And he either by his own volition or by the urging of his employer, he was sort of active in this organization.
Who was his employer?
C.W. Bunting, who was a farm implement agency here.
Okay.
And Bunting was all for the narrow-minded, ignorant, despicable attitudes of the people that became active members of the Klan. Not all of them did. A strange thing, I judge from reading this, that some of them slipped backwards a little now and then.
So, what other effects on the community? It sounds like this kind of attitude of anger and hatred toward others had support in the community.
Yes, it did. Not everybody. I would say, although they made quite a bit of noise, actually they were in the minority. That's my idea.
Minority here in LeGrand. Okay.
Yes.
But they did get... Did they get people in business and some of the leaders in the community?
Yes, they did.
Did they get backing from them?
Yes, they did that. And they got those people to go along with their narrow, selfish, cruel attitudes.
Do you know any other businesses or community leaders who were supporting this?
When I got here, it was all over. Except for one thing, possibly. As I mentioned earlier, a mill owner in Wallowa County thought it would be to his advantage to acquire some of the good, strong black loggers or workmen from down south, like in, what state is that? Well, anyway, he brought a whole bunch of them up there. And they did what they were hired to do and did it well. I got acquainted with a number of them. They came to my office. My wife particularly, took care of some of their